A missing person is a person who has vanished and is unconfirmed as alive or dead, as their location and fate are unknown.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Down the Rabbit Holes podcast. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Amy. And I'm pretty anxious to get this one started because...
All right.
Right? I think this might be the case that I've stumbled upon the most.
Really?
Like, when I click on something, I end up on this case. When I do a random, like, Charlie Project search... I'll end up always clicking on this one again and again. And the name sometimes is not familiar, but as soon as I see the picture, I'm like, oh, it's this case again. And the reason that I hadn't really covered it is because the bare minimum that I was able to read always told me that there was one conclusion, like, which again is a great reminder that reading the bare minimum or surface level stuff does not give you the information required to really understand what's going on. So it's like, it's a constant lesson. It's a constant reminder. And this is exactly why it's always great to revisit cases or to have some of the requests that we get, because it forces you to go and look at the finer details. But I do want to say, this time I didn't stumble across this article. I was looking at our request list, and I really wanted to cover one on a request, and it was thought to be for me, and this is from Stephanie, and I hope that, Stephanie, you know who you are, and that we're finally covering it, because I think it's been on our list for a while.
All right, I'm ready to dive in.
All right, then. Well, the case that I'm going to talk about today is the case of John Spira, and... little bit of, like, 1 hour ago background on this case. I had it all done and set to go. And Melissa was like, hey, can you give me, like, another hour or something like that? And I was like, sure, no problem. And I just started, like, trying to get my sources together. And then I looked on Google and I was like, oh, my God, did I miss an article? And it said disappeared. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I have an hour to kill. So I went in my butt. The disappeared episode that I didn't know existed until a very fortunate search.
That's awesome.
Which I appreciate because you get family and friends.
For sure. You get context. You get to know them.
Exactly. And you get some of the interviews from family and friends, but this is in a very chronological, or the history and everything that happens in the case is narrated by the family from, like, a chronological standpoint, which I very much appreciate. So that's just my little two cents about how I got extra at, like, the last moment.
I love it. Okay. All right, dive in.
So John Spira was born on September 24th of 1961. He was close with his family, including his sister Stephanie and his brother Tom. I don't have a lot of information about, you know, any early childhood experiences, but there doesn't seem to be anything in regards to trauma or relationships that were broken or anything. I don't really know how he did in school or specifically what sports he played, if he played any, or what activities he was in. But what I do know is that he did go into the military sometime after high school. He was in the Army. And he did pretty well there. And this kind of speaks to his personality. John seemed to love all life had to offer. He was a pilot. He was a race car driver. He was a businessman who had lots of different business ideas and endeavors. And he was a very talented musician.
Wow.
I have a feeling there's probably more. He dabbled and probably had all these great ideas about what he wanted to do and achieve next. I can't see a man like this being like, oh, I got to this point in life where I've achieved all my goals. Like, I'm just going to do nothing. I can see him just being on to the next. John was talented and well-liked. So when I say he was a musician, I mean, so you need to have talent to be a pilot. You need smarts, practice, and talent to be a pilot, in my opinion. But, you know, like, when it came to being a musician, he wasn't just playing sporadically. My understanding is he played several instruments, and he actually was very well-versed, very well-played, and really recognized as a talent. John eventually meets and marries Suzanne. Very little is known about Suzanne in general. Seems as though her identity and some of the details about her are kind of kept private, I'm sure, for numerous reasons. It seemed pretty great at first until, unfortunately, her child living in New York is accused of murdering her boyfriend. According to Disappeared, this was really stressful, and she frequently stayed in New York. Allegedly, this took a great toll on the marriage, and it was beyond repair. So I think at first John felt awful and he was very supportive of whatever Suzanne had to do. I think that Suzanne changed, and rightfully so, with this heavy burden in her life. I imagine just stress is very distracting. Maybe you're scared, you're walking on pins and needles. I don't know what the results were of that trial, or at least I don't recall from the episode, but I can see how this would take just a significant toll on someone.
For sure.
And yes, we know that it did on the marriage. Suzanne and John, sadly, they decided to divorce. The divorce was contentious, according to friends and family, yet they remained living together for quite some time, and I don't know exactly how long, but it sounds like a couple of years. And this was up until John's disappearance. John had a stable business he started with a friend named Dave Steuben. They had been partners owning Universal Cable, an underground cable company, which I've come to learn very little about. However, it is basically putting wiring and cable underground. I know that it looks a lot like construction. You need that type of equipment to kind of get things going. So when I think about owning a business like this, you have lots of assets.
Right. Okay.
Those close stated that they sometimes disagreed, and I'm talking about John and Dave, but overall it was a decent working relationship. Although things were rough, there was so much positive in John's life, such as his band. So I mentioned he was a musician and he really appreciated blues. And he had been in a band, well, I don't know if it's the same band, but he had been playing in bands for about 20 years. I feel like it's the same band, but I'm not sure, and that's so rare to find. So if that's true that it was the same band, wow, they really did a great job.
For sure.
He took it very seriously. This man would play sick. He would never be late. He would always be professional. He also had a new relationship. So he was dating someone named Renata, and it seemed like they really hit it off and things were going all right. He had his hobbies, and as of the day of his disappearance, it seemed like things would only get better. And let me tell you a little bit more about that. So we're approaching Friday, February 23rd of 2007. Now, quick little background and some information about location is John was residing in the West Chicago area, and it sounds like his parents and his siblings lived out in Arizona. I'm really unclear if he's from Arizona and moved out to Chicago, or if the family was originally from Chicago and he stayed behind while they moved. It's not really, I think, a huge deal, but it's helpful to know that we're in Chicago.
Yeah, for sure.
Very much like weather in the Northeast. You know, you have the hot summers, you have the cold winters. So, as usual, you know, on any other day, this Friday, February 23rd of 2007, John got up and he went to have his usual breakfast before meeting for divorce negotiations, which appear to have looked like a settlement would be made. According to John's sister, he was basically going to be like, this divorce has gone on long enough. We need to come to a settlement. This is it, or we're going to trial. And it sounded like from that meeting that everything was settled and it was going to go to, let's just wrap this thing up, write everything up and have a judge sign off on it, and we're set to go.
Love it.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is what probably at this point they both wanted. But I know that, you know, they both loved the house that they were sharing. So I can only imagine that that was one thing that was tough. John's brother had said, you know, she really lived a great lifestyle and perhaps that was difficult to give up. But I mean, that is opinion. I don't know of any quote that she said or any reason to believe that. I don't know what she did for a living. So I'm not really sure. So like I said, John would be able to finally move on with his life. After meeting with the divorce attorney and having this meeting, John headed to meet with a friend, and the friend had said they met around 3 and it was a good meeting, and John was in a really great place. You could tell that he felt like a weight lifted off his shoulders, and they even made plans to go out to dinner the following night. So John's like ready to go. He's just probably on cloud 9, making plans with friends. Things are good. At some point after that meeting, John contacts his girlfriend and he's like, why don't we go out to dinner tonight? And she's kind of like, no, I'm going to have to decline. I mean, I've got things to do. Maybe I'll join later, but maybe just call a friend and see if they'll meet up with you. So then John actually did call a friend and his friends agreed that they would go out for dinner and that they would meet up around 8:30. At this time, it gets to be around 5 p.m., and what we believe happened is that John and his business partner were left alone in the building. And around 5, John leaves from the office, heads out towards his truck. And that's the last time that John is ever seen. Throughout the evening, John's girlfriend is trying to get in touch with him. She is trying to no avail. According to what she says in the Disappeared episode, he was a little bit irritated when he did not get the answer that he hoped for when she was invited out to dinner. So she kind of was like, well, it's a little weird, but I guess he's upset with me and just doesn't want to talk with me. And I'm just going to have to accept that. So the next day, on Saturday, so at this point, you know, she's continuing to try and contact him. However, the phone is going to voicemail. So Renata is a little bit anxious, but, you know, she's giving herself every reason to believe that something else is going on here other than, I don't know, something potentially scary. That night, John is scheduled to have a gig. She's supposed to meet him at the gig, and he is supposed to catch up with that friend that he spoke to yesterday in regards to having a meal or something like that before they head to the gig together, and his friend will stay for the gig. Well, John didn't end up showing. Renata ended up going to the gig, to which she immediately arrived and realized, okay, John's truck's not here. I'm really nervous. She goes in and she notices they have started playing and John is not there.
Which was very unlike him.
Exactly. Exactly. So everyone, remember what I told you. This guy is so professional. He would never accept anyone else not showing for a gig. He would never accept anyone being late to a gig. He's played in sickness, in health, throughout his whole musical career, if you want to call it. So this is like the moment of panic. So she waits till she can get a word in with some of the other bandmates. And they say, no, we haven't heard from him. At this point, Renata like storms out of there and she's like, well, I got to go find him. So this is Chicago and this is February. So what do we think happens? Well, you probably guessed it. A huge snowstorm had rolled in throughout the day, and it was really picking up at night.
Now, this is the day after he was last seen.
Correct.
So he essentially has a 24-hour, 28-hour head start at this point.
Yes, unfortunately.
Okay.
So she starts searching for him. It's getting really bad out. So she does what we all hope we would do, right? She calls the police.
Right.
Well.
Oh, gosh.
They don't quite say exactly what we don't want to hear, but it's pretty close. They're basically like, we hear you and we want to help, but we can't file a missing persons report because you're not the next of kin.
What?
Right.
That's a new one.
I'm sure that it's said, but we often hear the wait 24 hours, all that stuff that we know good and well. So Renata doesn't stop there. She heads down to the police department and she tries again to get someone to take this seriously. So she fills out a whole bunch of paperwork and she hands it right back to them. And they're like, oh, you're not next of kin. So we can't do anything. She's like, okay. So at some point here, the family is contacted and they hear what the police are saying. They're like, next of kin has to be the one that makes the report. Don't understand it. But anyway, the family obviously looks to Suzanne, soon to be ex-wife. And they say, Suzanne, we really need you to do this. And she's like, I'm sure he's fine. And she seems really kind of resistant and reluctant to actually call and make the report. However, she does. In the middle of all of this, the family, Renata is doing the searching, and she's able to find the location of John's truck. And it was not far at all from the last place that he was seen, which is Universal Cable, where he works. Now, for me, this wouldn't immediately set off enormous alarm bells. I suppose I would be concerned. But this was a big deal because I guess it was very important, you know, for John to drive. He never did anything without his truck. He was very much in charge of his own transportation.
Right.
So I guess that was concerning. Suzanne, like I said, filed the police report. And that's when police were able to start investigating. Now, this is nearly 2 days later. So 48 hours later from when he went missing. And they appeared to start at his job. There was no sign of a struggle. But it was, they agreed, a little bit odd that his car was there. The police were able to check cell phone records, and nothing notable really came up. The cell phone appeared to operate in the location of his office until 11 p.m. the night he disappeared, at which time it either died or was switched off. Police did ground searches. They had dogs out in all the terrain around the office because it seemed to be kind of off the beaten path, kind of around a huge wooden area, and that was searched extensively. When police started to interview family and friends, employees at the company noted a large roll of industrial plastic wrap was missing around the same time as John's disappearance.
Well, that's not suspicious.
I mean, it sounds like, to me, it's like, wow. You never have these big things go missing and all of a sudden it is when John goes missing. And I hate to go right to crass, but I have a feeling all of you true crime people that would be something that you could probably wrap a body in. And I'm not saying anything that the family wouldn't have said themselves in interviews. Like, it strikes me as so, I don't know what the word is, but the family seems to very much be able to look at this logically. When there's those things that you listen to families talking about that they don't actually say, and the people are like, oh, I know why you might not want to say that because you don't want to accept that something might be true. They say it all. They have all of the theories. So I don't know what word that is, but they're able to look at this through multiple lenses. You know, at first, Dave is cooperative. Suzanne was cooperative. she had said that they had a very amicable divorce, which everyone kind of found odd because it seemed very contentious. Dave had said the last time that he saw John was when he was leaving the office, and he had left when I think it was either a contractor or a janitor was still there. But when talking to this janitor or contractor, he had said, no, I actually left before either of them left. Eventually, Dave had lawyered up and he stopped being at all cooperative with the police. 100%. Like, his lawyer wouldn't even talk to the police. Silence. And without being able to talk more to people close to John, unfortunately, this case lost a lot of traction. So the family really tried to do their own kind of investigation. They hired professionals to continue helping to do searches. They continued searches. They had people that were very experienced in searching through difficult terrain, such as the water. Nothing really came up. And again, things kind of fizzled out. The family became a little bit desperate, and around September of 2007, so this is several months, the family was just like, we have to keep this in the media's eye, like, we have to bring attention to it. They bought huge, huge banners, like you would see on fences. I mean, they're probably nearly billboard-sized. And they put it up across the street from where John worked, his office building.
That's perfect. People would recognize him.
That's the hope. That's exactly what they were hoping. After it was put up the very next day, it was ripped down.
What?
So another banner was made, and the family put it on wooden posts. They really tried their best to make sure that it could not come down. On 9/14/2007, it was destroyed within 24 hours.
Well, that's okay. That's not okay. That's bizarre and okay at the same time. And it came out that's okay.
Yes. So 9/16, another one was put up again. And I can't even make this up. A fire destroyed the business, and the banner was also, I'm not clear if it was burned down with the building, which I don't think it was, but I think it was simultaneously tore down again. That fire was deemed arson. Really high hopes, I mean, because this seems so connected at this point. Random arson, and we're trying to get attention about our loved one's missing persons case. Well, you'd think a lot came out of that. But nothing beyond being able to say, yeah, this is arson, came out of that whatsoever. Unfortunately, Suzanne has passed. So any information that we have might be gone with her, if there is anyone. And Dave remains uncooperative with police. One special that I did watch did discuss the strange finding that Dave and Suzanne at least talked after the disappearance and were seen hanging out together. That was after the disappearance. There's no evidence that it continued, but I think the family was basically like, Suzanne, that's weird. Stop doing that.
Did Dave initially like help file the missing persons report?
No. That is not my understanding. And my understanding is he did not participate in searches. He has denied, his lawyer, has denied searches of his property, additional interviews, everything. Lips are sealed. Won't talk to anybody.
So what are the theories?
Well, after law enforcement kind of toyed with foul play for quite some time, they really tried to hone in on, did he leave his life? Did he disappear on purpose? He's a pilot. He very much could have went to see his parents. I understand from the disappeared episode as well that his mother had just had a pretty big surgery. And, hey, maybe he was going to fly out there and see her and something happened. Nope. And then Renata also made the very good point of he would not have flown out in a near blizzard. Like, it was snowing. He's a pilot. He knows better. Would not have happened. Also, friends and family say, sure, you know, he was going through this divorce, but literally the day that everything seemed to be going in the direction that was positive, he leaves his good life with a band, with a girlfriend, with tons of friends, family that he loves, a business, a job, several jobs, several endeavors. I could go on and on about all the awesome things happening for him. That is still on the table, I believe, but I think most people not even arguably believe that this is foul play, and most people believe that he's probably no longer with us. So, you asked for the theories. So, the second one is, did Dave have something to do with this? And then kind of a sub-theory of that is, did Dave and Suzanne have something to do with this? Or did just Suzanne have something to do with this? And you won't really find anything about random foul play.
And that's fair, because the building burning down has to be connected, and that feels very personal.
It sure does, if you ask me. So, starting with leaving his life, I kind of think I summed that up with everyone's quotes about him as a person. Why?
Right.
And he didn't leave with a plane, because we would have heard about a missing plane.
Amy, I hate this case already. So, I assume that law enforcement said, follow the money. Which means, where did the money go after the building burned down? And who got his half of the partnership? Did his ex-wife, or did his business partner?
My understanding is his business partner got a insurance payout. And what happened was he was able to rebuild in the same location, however, never went back there. He instead took his business and operated it out of another building somewhere in the area.
Well, that's weird, too.
I mean, I don't really understand it, but yeah. In terms of anything financially going on, there hasn't been too much about the money in the business, but I've heard back and forth that John could have suspected that something was going on with Dave and the business's money, and actually vice versa, that Dave, I believe he even said to police that he wondered if John was actually stealing from the business.
Okay, so that's contentious a little bit, but enough to kill him?
People have killed for less, I guess.
They have, but
I know, you want me to make it make sense, and I can't.
So I think I have to think that, well, I want to say it has to do with Dave, right? But I have to assume law enforcement hit that at every angle, because it's so obvious.
Well, you can't do much if Dave's not talking.
Right, but they have the right to follow the money trail. And if anything fishy came up with that, I think that would give them enough to have another conversation.
So maybe nothing was outright going on with money, but maybe Dave wanted to try and buy out John. Maybe he knew John was really looking into other business ventures, which he often did and was always in the middle of. And he wanted the business to himself. And John was like, I'm not giving up the business. Like, even if I'm doing other things, I'm here to stay. Which Dave probably, I mean, this is an assumption, but he probably didn't have any other business ventures going on.
So everything in me wants to lean toward Dave. What I'm stuck on is, how did law enforcement not get a lead?
Well, there's no sign of struggle in the office, so that would mean he either did an excellent job, if it's him, cleaning up, or he came upon John by surprise.
And then wrapped him in shrink wrap.
Or an alternate theory is he took him somehow away from the location, like he lured him away. Hey, let's just go down the street, grab a drink, let's talk.
Amy, I hate all of this.
I know. Then you would assume that how would he get him back to the office without suspicion, wrap him in bubble or whatever it was, the plastic wrap, and then transport him again seems a little complicated.
And I would think if it was the ex-wife, it would have happened before a settlement happened, because she would have gotten everything. Like, if he doesn't have a will, or even if he does, she's his wife. So until...
Well, here's my question. Is a divorce still going to be signed off on if the other person is missing? And if it can't be, does that mean she thinks she's going to get all the assets that way? Because, for example, if eventually he's declared legally dead, which often happens a certain number of years after disappearance, does she think, oh, I just have to wait it out for 7 years before we can declare him legally dead and then I get all of his assets, including half the business?
But she wouldn't have gone to her final hearing then. It would have happened before that.
Well, it wasn't a final hearing. It was just a meeting to say, hey, we're going to settle.
She would have done it before they, because any mediator is going to show up in court, testify and say, like, listen, I was there. Here's what they decided upon. We didn't get to file it yet. It's going to be contested. She's not going to get it.
I guess I would wonder about what that entails, because does it mean something has to be notarized or signed off by a judge when a judge says, do you agree to the terms of this?
What do you think happened then?
So I'm arguing this point so strongly, and yet I don't actually think it's Suzanne.
That's why I asked, because you were arguing it strongly. So what is it that you think happened?
I think probably something along the lines of Dave had been saying, like, I want to buy you out of this business or something. Although, on the other hand, I feel like John would have told someone that. But whatever it was about business. And at the end of the day,
money talks.
I think something happened because Dave was not happy with something in the relationship having to do with the business.
I would agree with you. I think it has to. I'm stuck on Dave. I just don't understand how law enforcement hasn't been able to get an angle.
I don't understand why you have an attorney that won't even talk. What does that say?
Any attorney is going to tell you not to talk.
But the attorney won't talk on his behalf?
Any attorney is going to tell you no.
This guy didn't participate in searches. This guy...
No, I'm not saying he's not.
I know.
No, I think it has to be linked to this guy, Dave.
But for what? What did he get out of this at the end of the day? It doesn't seem to me he's walking around with $1 million.
But he got the insurance check and rebuilt the business and did it how he wanted to do it.
Okay, so perhaps so. Or maybe he was like, I'm burning this place down because I'm going to get an insurance check and do something with it, but I can't now because people are hot on my tail.
Right. So he burned it down and then rebuilt it. And I bet you didn't spend the entire check to rebuild it.
Right. Well, let me tell you, you know, like a banner, someone was watching them, the family put up a banner because that person in 24 hours, a couple of times, tore it down. That says to me anger. Like, this is personal.
I agree 100%. I think it is Dave because it was in front of his office building. And he's probably trying to, like, detract suspicion for himself. And again, this is just our speculation. If it turns out that he is completely innocent, we will pull the episode down. Whenever I feel like I come down hard on someone, I feel like I have to say that.
No, I agree with you because the last thing we want is to narrow in on someone in a biased way or emotionally. But in reality, I'm looking at some things that are fact here, and I can't say stranger. That makes no sense to me. And yeah, I guess I also think Suzanne is a possibility, but not as strong a contender as Dave.
Oh, I think Dave is so much stronger because I'd like to know what the divorce settlement looked like, but... Did anything change after his death for her is what I'd want to know. But again, I think law enforcement would be all over that too.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Amy, I don't know.
Until she died, of course.
Yeah.
But no leaving life, no dying by suicide.
No, I don't think either of those.
It does not sound like either of those. And there seems to be too much anger. And... it's proven arson to call this random.
It is for sure not random. 1,000% not random.
And it does not sound like he has anybody else that he could have made mad, although it had been discovered that, you know, after his death and through an investigation, that he was having, to some degree, some relationships with other women. It has been said that single, married, whatever. So perhaps that could be another theory. He made someone's husband or other lover furious. But if we believe that the missing plastic wrap...
But then why burn down the business?
...has something to do with it, then it doesn't quite seem like,
yeah,
like a stranger would know exactly when, how, and where it is in the office building to even use that.
Yeah, it definitely has to be someone that knows him and knows him well.
And something happened to him between, say, 5 and 8:30 when he was supposed to meet his friend for dinner. It didn't happen overnight or anything like that.
Right. Agreed. That's a small window of time, too.
And you have to remember, this is Chicago in February. It's dark at 4.
Yeah. You're right. I don't know. I'm so frustrated with this. I mean, I have to lean to Dave, but I don't understand what law enforcement has done or hasn't done.
And I want there to be some other bigger motive that someone can tell me about. Tell me the sum of money. Tell me how him having the business,
yes,
and being the sole owner would make his life exponentially better. For that matter, Suzanne, too. Like, tell me about the divorce settlement. Tell me about the details of that. What would make her potentially do something that would give her some financial gain?
100%. You want to open it up?
Yeah. I mean, I just want to wrap up by kind of saying I think it's like 80-20. Dave to Suzanne. And I don't really think that it was together.
I would echo that. I support that.
Wow. Sometimes we agree and we're still slightly different, but I'd say this is like an exact agreement.
Yeah, only because it looks so bad for Dave.
It does. And please come forward someday and be like, this is why I'm absolutely innocent.
And not for nothing, $750,000 is a lot of money. And people have killed for way less.
I know. You are so right. You're so right. All right. Well, we're going to open it up. Let us know your thoughts, feelings, theories. And Stephanie, especially you, since you requested this case, I really want to know what you think, too.
Yes. And we'll be back next week with a whole new case.
All right. Thanks.
Bye. Bye.
For more information about this case and other cases we've covered, visit our website at www.downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Follow us and interact with us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, we are Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast. You can also reach out to us via email at theories@downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast is a 2002 production written, hosted, and developed by Amy Lamar and Melissa Benitez. Music by Kevin Wyman.
Audio production by Caitlin Reynolds.